This evening is case number 12,282, Janki and Bijawati Ramnath, New Singular Wireless PCS LLC, doing business as A&T and T Mobility, seek a special use exception to place a telecommunications tower, interpretation of the county code, and variances from the maximum fence height for a proposed structure and from the maximum height for a proposed telecommunications tower.
Folks, we still have cases going on. Ma'am, we still have cases going on, please.
I kept my book from last time.
If I can continue, Chairman. Sections 115.23, 115.179, 115.194.2, and 115.210 and 115.227 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is on a through lot located on the northwest side of O'Neill's Road, approximately 160 feet west of Sussex Highway, that's Route 13, and on the south side of Easter Lane, approximately 204 feet west of Sussex Highway. The 911 address is 27718 O'Neill's Road, Seaford. The zoning district is AR1, Agricultural Residential, and the tax parcel is District 132, Map 7, Parcel 24.00. Specifically, the applicant is requesting a special use exception for a proposed 150-foot tall monopole with a 6-foot high lightning rod and a fence compound with associated ground-based equipment. The applicant is also requesting a variance of 6 feet from the required 160-foot height limit to allow for the proposed lightning rod above the monopole. Staff would note that since the application was submitted, staff have discussed the applicant's request for an interpretation of the code and a variance from the maximum height of the fence and have determined that this is no longer required. Staff would note that one letter of support has been received, 0 letters of opposition, and 0 mail returns. The letter of support notes the potential for improved cell phone reception and call quality. Thank you.
Good evening. I have 3 witnesses tonight. I would like to get them sworn in if possible. Civil engineer Paul Chan, radio frequency engineer Sean Paul, and site acquisition consultant Christopher Lash.
Good evening. Can you state your name and address for the record?
Sure. Sean Paul. My address is 22 West Eppley, that's Eppley Drive, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, 17015.
Thank you. Wait right here.
Christopher Lash. Business address is 200 North Warner Road, King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
Paul Chan, business address 200 North Warner Road, King of Prussia, PA, 19406.
Okay. And do the 3 of you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening, Jim.
I would like to summarize the exhibit binders that have been handed up, and they're also reflected in a slideshow, but I don't think we have to go through the slides if you want to just turn to the tabs that we're talking about. And then at the end, I'll just have the witnesses affirm that they agree with the summary that I'm giving. So normally we start with tab 7, which is the existing coverage. And you can see that in the center of the map, which is where this proposed site would be, there's quite a bit of white, which means lack of reliable coverage. If you flip over to page 8, that's showing the coverage that we would get if we built this facility. The darker green is a stronger signal, the light green is not as strong, but still a strong signal. So this site has been designed to work with the network of surrounding AT&T antennas so that the antennas can work together to provide this coverage. Coverage has been affected lately by the proliferation of cell phones. Right now, 80% of all 911 calls are made from cell phones, and approximately 60% of households do not have landlines. So people are relying on their cell phones more and more. They're using the phones. And Mr. Paul is here to talk about the radio frequency reports, which are in the exhibit binder, which describe how the sites you know, why the site is needed from a radio frequency perspective, but basically 7 and 8 really kind of give you the visual depiction. In order to achieve the coverage shown on A8, the antennas need to be mounted at a rad center of 150 feet. That's at the top of the tower. Above the top of the tower, we need to put a lightning rod. So that's why we're seeking a basically a height variance to allow us to put a 6-foot lightning rod on top of the tower. Besides improving the coverage, this tower would allow offload of when some of the surrounding sites are at excess capacity, new calls can be routed to this antenna to offload exhaustion of capacity issues. We have a report at A9 that shows that the electromagnetic exposure from this antenna would be 0.06% of the maximum limitations. Exhibit A11 is an FAA report which shows that the FAA would not require the tower to be lit because it's not in a landing zone. However, the code does require every 50 feet to be lit, so we would comply with that. The site would only be visited once per month. It does not generate noise, traffic, or other adverse effects on neighbors. As I noted earlier, people actually depend on their cell phones more and more, so we see this as a benefit to the community rather than a detriment. We have at tab 13, we have photo simulations which show what the before and after photos would look like when the site was built. And you'll see by looking at that this would not have much of a visual impact on the community. So we would also make available space on the tower for two additional carriers. And we have a minimum setback of 75 feet, which is more than the 50 foot that would be required by code. Does the board have any questions about the radio frequency side of things?
No.
Okay.
It's about a standard with Verizon and every other tower that's been put up. But same thing in it, the radio frequency and everything else.
Definitely. Yeah. We were here, the same group was here in January for a different site, and we gave a very similar presentation.
Yes. I have no questions.
I had no questions either.
I do.
Okay.
All right.
How do you determine the reliable coverage without the proposed facility and this one? And then why, so the reliable coverage with the proposed facility, I would think, and maybe I'm thinking incorrectly, but you have light green where you had white with this monopole. And I guess it maybe the signal goes out away from the monopole, and that's why this is now a darker green.
Yeah, I can speak to those questions. So basically, just to be clear, and again, my name is Sean Paul. To be clear on the map titled Reliable Coverage Without the Proposed Facility, shows the predicted coverage of all the existing AT&T sites in the surrounding areas. So on that map specifically, where you do not see green or the absence of green, those are areas that are not predicted to have reliable coverage. Now,
and that key word is predicted, correct?
That is correct. Okay. So to take a step back, how these maps are generated is using an industry standard software program that takes into consideration the ground elevation, what's commonly referred to as clutter, which would be, is it a residential structure, is it a commercial structure, etc., as well as AT&T collecting data from their end users and then bringing that data into the tool to be able to adjust it for its accuracy. So it's a continual process of the tool, you know, ultimately hopefully becoming as accurate as possible. AT&T, and quite frankly, any other wireless provider, is not in the business of building a site that's not necessary. It's very costly, and certainly AT&T doesn't necessarily make money off of building towers. They make money off of happy service customers. So to answer your question, ma'am, the without proposed facility coverage map is just the existing sites today and with the reliable coverage. And then the second page, I'm sorry, nine, is reliable coverage with the proposed facility. So on this coverage map, you see the existing network's coverage, but now added to it is the proposed facility that we're before you here this evening for. And that is the anticipated reliable coverage that that site will produce. Now, both in the near field and the far field of this site, there will be an improvement in coverage. Fairly significant, especially along Sussex Highway, the businesses along that area, and then also in the homes surrounding. So you can see that the difference between the dark green, which is the existing mm-hmm. network coverage today, and the light green marries quite well together in terms of creating a very seamless network, and that's the ultimate, one of the many goals for AT&T as well as other wireless providers. So, and as Mr. Jordan mentioned earlier, the user demand is continually growing. The user profile is continually changing. More people today are disconnecting their home phone service, but more importantly, also using their devices, their handheld devices, in lieu of their personal computers. And so, and now that AT&T and other carriers are beginning to offer the all-you-can-eat or the unlimited data plans, there's really no consequence to an end user to not use their cell phone. And in fact, quite honestly, the increase in growth is attributed to that, whereas before, when you had a cap or a limit on the amount of data you could use per month, everyone was very careful to use the Wi-Fi when possible, but now that's becoming kind of less of a constraint. So
in answer to the question,
one of my colleagues also mentioned that with the FirstNet. So it provides an opportunity for FirstNet to be deployed if necessary for the public safety. So, which is something that AT&T is spearheading. And so if determined that FirstNet would be able to be utilized on the site, and it would have the capability of using FirstNet as it is, as the structure is today, no additional antennas would be required. But if that site were to be used, then the first responders, which have their own independent FirstNet network, would have advantage of this in-building coverage. So many first responders today are relying oftentimes on their cellular phone, even though they may have some radio network equipment, whether it be 400 megahertz or et cetera, but the FirstNet will allow them to have exclusive access to the tower.
Chris Lash, I just want to mention with the FirstNet, we're working up in State College on it also, and some of the police chief that we're working with, he's been there 20-some years. He's never been able to text or call his wife during a football game. He can pick up his phone because it is a FirstNet access phone, and he can call, text, send email for the first time. I will mention, I'm not sure if Sussex County is on board with FirstNet yet, but the computers and police vehicles and everything eventually, if they choose FirstNet, which is the national provider, AT&T provides it, we won the national contract. Band 14 is what they use. Band 14 is already proposed on this drawing.
So moving forward,
the technology it gets more and more, so everybody realizes. Another example I'll throw out, in Puerto Rico after the disaster, guys were on the ground from different states. They had FirstNet equipment because they were given that. They were talking to the Coast Guard through a radio. Guys were talking through phones to the Coast Guard. It's very, if you do some research on it, it's very interesting how it all works to help public safety.
And it's called FirstNet.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. It's a very interesting
I would think that would be an added plus to your packet in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got a question on FirstNet. I'm a responder for coming first. That you're doing away with the radios, or this, if the radios are down, you can go to FirstNet.
You can do both. You can pick up your radio and call somebody on the phone, you can pick up your computer, the computers in the ambulances and the trucks that talk to the hospitals and talk to each other. Uh-huh. They're all on first net, everything's tied together. So something bad happens, the DEA comes in and they're on a federal channel, right?
Okay.
And you're there to help support, you're the ambulance guy, right? Mm-hmm. You guys can talk to each other now. You don't need 10 radios to talk to each other if you're on first net.
Okay.
It's a national setup.
Yeah, we got a cell phone and did the same thing with that cell phone.
You can pick up your cell phone if you're registered with AT&T on FirstNet.
Okay.
You get first access. You and every other first responder get first access. So if something bad happens and there's 4,000 people there trying to hit one cell phone tower, you're ahead of everybody else.
Okay.
That's the point. That's why that's what happened up at Penn State. There was a lot of testing. Penn State and AT&T are hooked up. There's a lot of testing there, but then they also used it down in Puerto Rico, which there were some very interesting results that people from all over the country that went down there to help. Where I'm from, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, when I used to run as a firefighter, we carried Bucks, we carried Berks. Each county had different frequencies, so when we went to respond to help, we had to carry all these different radios.
Can you just get closer to the mic?
Sorry. Some of that stuff will go away as FirstNet is implemented nationwide and in Puerto Rico and other territories of the United States.
We have the same thing right now. Every state we go into, we got to change frequency all the time.
Right.
Right now, yep. You can do away with that. That's a good idea.
So they're very slowly good. Starting to roll the technology, and then eventually, I don't know if radios will go away. Motorola probably doesn't want to hear that.
No,
but you're going to be able to, you're picking up a phone now and calling in whatever, being able to talk to people.
That's a good backup.
It's really interesting.
Yes,
real
it
interesting
is.
Concepts.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And all that's available on the internet. You can look up FirstNet and AT&T has their own thing, and FirstNet.gov has their own thing, so you can read all about it. It's very interesting.
Cool. Thank you for that.
Because Sussex County is a volunteer-based fire service, so that would be a huge plus for our county, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, and I know Delaware was part of it too. I don't know if this Blade site was, but in Pennsylvania, I have lists of sites that we're doing, like Forksville and Barbers, which are up near World's End State Park, are in the middle of nowhere. There's no coverage. We're putting towers so that the state police and the local responders can have connection.
That's what we're doing now with the, we have alarm, I punch my phone in, I get the address right off the bat before I get to the firehouse. I know where I'm going right off the bat. That's a good thing.
Technology is amazing. I remember carrying the old pager that would beep, and then it would tell you, you'd have to listen at 1 o'clock in the morning, make sure you heard it. Yeah. And then it got to the regular pager, and now it's just going to, it's on your phone. It comes over on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's always there, then you can roll back and look at it, you know?
Excellent. I have to look that up when I get home.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Okay.
Very good. I have one other. Can we go to tab 13?
Sure.
View number 3. It looks like there's a cell phone tower on the right. That must be near maybe Frederick Ford is where I'm looking at, I think, maybe.
Is that a radio station?
Yes.
Oh, it's a radio station?
No radio station, yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I know good business. You're not going to put a tower where you don't need to, but I just saw that, you know. Yep.
It's not strong enough.
Okay. I really like the first net.
It's going to be open to... I'm sorry, you're not done yet? Go ahead.
I just like that it's more community service and, you know, you're not just satisfying your customers. You're doing something above and beyond for all the county, whether I had an AT&T phone or, you know, I didn't, but it's about public safety.
Yeah. I mean, the days of a cellular phone being a luxury are long gone, and now they're becoming absolute necessities for people to call 911, but then also for first responders.
Right.
And certainly the FirstNet is a, you know, basically giving priority to the first responders, which is a very important thing, especially if a first responder is competing with an individual that's just trying to call their friend for no reason. It only makes sense.
And they take bandwidth, and I'm not the RF engineer, but I know from doing this for over 10 years, someone trying to dial 911 and then there's the other guy standing there videoing the fight that's outside the bar, right? The guy who's videoing the fight outside the bar takes up a lot of what we call bandwidth. The guy dialing 911 takes less, but a first responder would pass both of those people and be in line. So it's 911 emergency communications, fire service, law enforcement, tribal nations, EMS, emergency management, and the whole extended community of the federal government, state government is all if you go on firstnet.gov, it lists everybody who's involved. So it's a pretty big program.
Cool.
You know?
Okay. Very good. I just would say that you did such a good job with us. It would be so nice to have it before tonight.
Okay. We did submit all the exhibits.
But okay. You went to a lot of trouble.
You did. Okay. He was very good.
And we can't, you know, we look at what you give us here, but.
Good job.
Yeah, very good job.
Thanks.
Okay.
One other question. Are you going to have it open for any other a carrier too? Or are you going to be?
Yes, two more carriers. Two more.
14.
Okay. I just note that we always easily ask that question. It's
open. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. No other questions from me?
Any further questions?
Not right now.
excuse me.
I'd like to ask the three witnesses to state whether or not they agree or disagree with the summary that I gave, or if they have anything to add.
I, Sean Paul, do agree with the testimony or explanation given by Mr. Jordan this evening.
Thank you.
I, Chris Lash, agree with Mr. Jordan's testimony.
I, Paul Chan, agree with Mr. Jordan's testimony.
Okay, thank you. So,
thank you.
So for the special exception, the standard is that we do not substantially affect adversely the uses of neighboring and adjoining properties. And I think through the first net and the photo simulations, we've demonstrated that. And with the improvement of coverage, variance standards, we're seeking really a de minimis variance. Most jurisdictions that I go to don't even count a lightning rod as part of the antenna or the tower. But the testimony was that 150 feet is the height that's necessary to give the coverage that's shown in here. And that's not a self-created hardship. It's the minimum relief that is needed, and it won't adversely affect surrounding properties.
Okay.
So I guess with that, I'm concluded.
Mr. Sharp.
A couple questions. How big is the site, the property?
The subject property is 5 acres, and then I believe the owners own the property that has the barns, I guess, to the left, or the
chicken
poultry
houses.
Is that correct,
yes,
sir?
Yes.
They're chicken houses.
Okay.
In Sussex County.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I guess the big question that I have, because I talked about the special use exception standard, I know you were touching on the variance standards, but the big question that I have is, you know, before the board, we have to show there's some uniqueness to the property as to why the variance is needed. That's got to be what creates the exceptional practical difficulty. I know that you stated that 150 feet is needed for the coverage, but I guess my question is, why couldn't it be 144 feet? Why wouldn't that work for the coverage perspective? Or is there some uniqueness to the property that makes it so it has to be a little taller?
Well, the uniqueness to the property is that the antennas need to be able to communicate with the other antennas in the network, and so the topography, any clutter on this property or anywhere between here and the other properties are going to affect the variance standards. And I guess one other issue before. We conclude the issue of the 6 feet. So in the special exception standards, it does say that in subsection C, an exception to the height limit of 150 feet for radio and television broadcasting station or tower is permitted as a special exception, provided that construction and safety features are approved by the director. So we would like to pursue that in the alternative, but as far as the variance, it's really the coverage is kind of based on the elevation of the property, both of our property and the surrounding properties, and you know, really the lightning rod, as you can imagine, is a de minimis structure. It's
Yeah, I think the issue that we've had at the board level is typically when we've had cell towers come up, the 150 feet includes the lightning rod. So usually they're 145 or 144 feet thereabouts. And that encompasses all that. And I guess the concern I've got, and perhaps some of the board shares it, perhaps not, is that, you know, if it's used to communicate with other towers, are we going to have this incremental increase where they're all going to be taller? And, you know, there is a height limitation in the code for a reason. So, you know, I didn't know if there, I think your test, your statement was that there was some topography or clutter, which may be a reason why it needs to be a little taller. So I was wondering if you could expound upon maybe what some of those topography and clutter issues are so to have a better understanding of that.
Yeah, I'm saying that the height of the tower is affected by, and the coverage is affected by topography and clutter. But the testimony was that the antennas at 150 feet are what gives us the coverage that's shown on the coverage plots. So we have to have a lightning rod above the the top of the antennas.
Was there any design looking at trying to fit it into compliance though?
If you drop the antennas, the coverage isn't as good. So I mean, the more you drop it, the worse the coverage gets.
And so does 6 feet have that level of a difference to it?
6 feet has, 6 feet, when you say that much of a difference, I mean, every foot drops the coverage. So it's just a question of, you know, if you drop it 6 feet, it's going to be worse than what we're showing, worse than what we tried to design for. So,
all right.
How about the has the board made any interpretations under for either this one or for any other applications 115-210C2, which says that antenna height. Antenna height can be exceeded using the special exception standards.
Well, I think it if it provided that they're approved by the director. So that's the issue there. I don't know, the director's not here tonight. I mean, that's the big kind of caveat on that 210C.
I'd still like to request the variance, but in the alternative, can we get that approval subject to the directors? It doesn't say that whether the director approval comes before or after the meeting.
Well, I suspect the board could leave that open if that was a question. If it didn't felt it met the variance standards, perhaps you could leave it open for that question for the director.
Or
there's a provision in the code on special height exceptions where it says, and this is what Mr. Jordan's referring to, an exception to the height limit of 150 feet for a radio or television broadcasting station or tower, provided the construction and safety features are approved by the director in accord with applicable regulations and provided that no hazard is created in an airport approach zone. I don't recall us ever having that kind of question coming up before the board.
Me neither.
I know that's something that, I mean, in my 7 years here, I don't recall that specific issue coming up. I think usually because most towers tend to be 150 feet or less, so right. We haven't had that specific issue come up.
I guess one other thing, and Mr. Lash pointed out to me, in our radio frequency report on the last page, page 11, the radio frequency report is exhibit A6, so appendix B.
Sorry, which exhibit did you say?
Oh, A6.
Thank you.
So the very last page is an appendix that is a list of existing AT&T sites. And the fourth column is antenna center lines. And then the last column is what county the tower's in. So
what's the closest tower to this property? That would affect how high you need to be. Is that correct?
Well, I guess the other point that we were making is that there's approximately 9 AT&T towers in Sussex, and One of them's 200 feet, one's 179, one's 170, one's 170, one's 230. So I guess just in terms of that statement that, you know, setting a precedent or whatever, we already are dealing with some antennas that that are mounted higher than 150 feet. And again, we're not even talking about mounting the antennas above 150. We're just putting a 6-foot lightning rod at the top.
Did you do a test, like Mr. Sharp was saying, with at 150 and then lower it so you can be in the variance, I mean, the height of it? You showed one here, this, at, then you showed the next page on 8, what covers that. Did you do one in between?
No, we did not do one at 145.
You didn't do one, okay.
No.
Okay.
What's the closest tower to this site of AT&T?
So the question is, which site is closest of the existing network? So again, under Appendix B, that was just referenced by Mr. Jordan, there is a column there that provides distance, which is the fifth column over from the left, distance from proposed site location in miles. So there you can see the actual distance from the proposed location this evening to the existing AT&T sites today. And so the closest one to answer your question would be what's referred to as the Seaford site, which is northwest from the proposed location, and that's 3.40 miles. So the site spacing, generally speaking, in this area is relatively further, and that's all dictated by the amount of population and the objective, and if there's new developments or new housing or et cetera.
But excuse me, I think they were interested in the height.
Now,
again, these are the center line heights. So this is the same as our proposal tonight is centerline height of 150.
That was not my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I asked, and my thinking is the reason why you need 150 feet is because your nearest tower is 3-point-something away. So you need the more height to get a broader signal.
That is correct, absolutely. And so obviously, or maybe it's not obvious, but the higher the tower, the more costs are associated with building a tower. So naturally, AT&T would not propose building a structure any higher than what's required. And so that is one of the driving factors behind the required height is to be able to provide the overall coverage for the targeted area, and meanwhile providing that seamless network coverage so that customers aren't driving down Sussex Highway and potentially dropping a call. So it has to be done so in order to be able to basically bring the existing territories that are covered surrounding all together and make it a seamless network. So the 150 feet is determined to be required to provide the most optimal coverage and the seamless coverage for the targeted area.
And the other tower we're talking about, what's the height of that one?
The other tower, which again is the closest tower to the proposed, is the Seaford Tower, and it's at 149 feet for the center line of the antenna, which means that if in the event, and I'm not sure exactly which antennas are being used, but if they're 8-foot antennas, that means that basically the top of that antenna would be at 153.
And there'd probably be a lightning rod on top.
And there would be a lightning rod, just simply how the sites are designed. There's a lightning rod so that obviously if lightning were to strike, it hits the rod and then it gets grounded. And I'm not an expert to speak of that nature, but I can tell you that a steel structure that exists today, including water tanks, they have grounding, measures built in so that there's no type of inadvertent situation.
So with a lightning, probably what, 156 feet with a lightning rod on it, somewhere around that?
Correct. Yeah, the tower itself is 150 feet, and then we would put a 6-foot lightning rod on top.
And the one in Seaford is probably close to it too then, right? It's 149, but...
6 foot, 155.
And bear in mind, these are the center lines, so that's where AT&T is currently installed at. It's very possible, and I don't know for sure, but it's possible there's another carrier above AT&T, maybe a Verizon or a Sprint. So these are just the center lines for where AT&T is installed. It doesn't necessarily mean that's a total structure height for the other sites referenced here in Appendix B.
But even if this was the top
yes.
array of antennas, there'd still most likely be a lightning rod.
That's absolutely correct.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. It has to be the highest point,
on
the tower, with the exception of if lighting were to be required by the FAA, then that would supersede the lightning rod. But in this case, it's determined that no lighting and or marking is required by the FAA.
But there is lighting required by the county.
Yes, and that's certainly, but it's not going to be required per the FAA, so there's no issues with visibility or concerns thereof, so right. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
No further questions.
Questions? Excuse me. Hearing no further questions, are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Up, oh, 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, both of the gentlemen in the back raised
their hands, Mr. Chairman. Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Chair, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion that we approve case number 12,282, that it will not substantially affect adversely the uses of adjacent neighboring property.
Okay.
And also that it meets the standards of 194.2 of the code, is that correct?
And it meets the standard of 194.2 of the code.
And I guess the other, because we also have a variance request as well, so I don't know if your motion is going to include that or if you just want to focus on the special use exception.
No, I'll do all of it. So I believe that they have met the standards for granting of variances. Uniqueness cannot otherwise be developed, not created by the applicant, will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood, and they are asking for a minimum variance.
Okay. Wait, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Ms. McGee and a second by Mr. Wharton that we approve case number 12,282. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye for the reasons stated.
Mr. Wharton?
Aye for those reasons stated.
Again, Ms. McGee?
Aye for my reasons.
And aye, Mr. Callaway. So by a vote of 4-0, case number 12,282 is approved.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.